Arizona News Radio, no survivors after a small plane crashes doing touch-and-go landings at the Casa Grande Airport today.
The plane burst into flames upon impact.
A 16-year-old student from Dysart High School arrested by Maricopa County Sheriff's deputies for carrying a loaded weapon onto a school bus in the campus and for allegedly making threats against a 14-year-old student. Customs and Border Protection officers at Nogales seized over $550,000 worth of cocaine and methamphetamine in two different incidents.
It was a compartment that was below the windshield of the Nissan van, so obviously they have to go through some extent to create that compartment. And the other compartment was, you know, near the gas tank.
Murder defendant Jody Arias said that she had strange feelings while having sexual relationships with Travis Alexander.
It just seemed like he sort of had, like, the Bill Clinton version, whereas over here it seemed like, you know, oral and anal sex were also sex to me, but not for him.
George Tanner, Arizona.
This KFNX check of your traffic is brought to you by Firestone Complete Auto Care. We've got some accidents out there, folks. A couple in Phoenix, one off to the side, Loop 202 westbound near the I-10 Highway 51 exit 1A. Another one in Phoenix, I-10 eastbound at 59th Avenue. A pedestrian has been struck. Use caution in that area. Also in Chandler, blocking the right lane, I-10 eastbound east of Highway 347 Wild Horse Pass Boulevard. There is a crash at that scene. This month, buy three and get the fourth free on Firestone Champion HR High Performance Tires for your passenger vehicle. Call 1-800-LOCATE-US to find the Firestone Complete Auto Care nearest you. Now let's check your forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, tomorrow, low 70s, a gorgeous Thursday, and then we start to change with this storm on Friday, partly cloudy, mid-60s, back into the cold 50s over the weekend, some scattered desert showers. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Thanks, Jim. Currently in Midtown, we're at 72 degrees. Your next news is in 30 minutes or when it breaks. You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. I'm James Hinnett, and you're up to date.
Geico presents 15 minutes to weather the storm. I'm Tom Jeans. Disasters can strike quickly and without warning. It can force you to evacuate your neighborhood or confine you to your home. What would you do if basic services like water or electricity were cut off? Knowing what to do is your best protection. Learn more about family disaster plans through your local Red Cross. That's 15 minutes to weather the storm. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO or geico.com.
This news report is sponsored by the Arizona Lottery. Tonight's Powerball jackpot is at $208 million. Get your tickets at the nearest Arizona Lottery retailer today.
Simple Green, the original green cleaner, presents the Green Tip of the Week. This week's tip, make a change. Try to carpool or take public transportation to work, school, or shopping just one day per week. Or try riding your bike one day. You'll save money, fuel, and get some exercise. That's this week's Green Tip of the Week. Visit our website at simplegreen.com.
When I grew up,
you're out of order.
I want to be a lawyer just like you.
You're out of order.
Good for you, son.
The whole trial is out of order.
If there's one thing America needs,
they're out of order.
It's more lawyers.
Oh. You got my pride hanging out of my bed.
Welcome to Legalese. This is your Jack. This is your host, Jack Wilenchek, who has been engaged in a very, very long set of legal proceedings today and is very, very tired, but is very, very excited to be on the air with all of you. And because we've got a guest today who you probably recognize his name. I know I did. His name is James Howard Kunstler, author of the national bestseller, The Long Emergency. He's got a new book out called Too Much Magic, subtitled Wishful Thinking, Technology, and the Fate of the Nation. This is the guy who said that we are going to reach peak oil. In other words, that we're going to run out of oil, and this is going to be a major, major problem. That's you know, it's just sitting beneath, it's a ticking time bomb sitting beneath the surface waiting to go off. James, are you on the line?
I am. I'm here. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to welcome you to the show. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
A pleasure.
All right. So, is that an accurate description of your theory that we're going to run out of oil? That we need to find some other way of dealing with that problem? And I take it that your answer is not what most people would say the answer is. You know, solar power, wind power, alternative energy. You think we need to do something else. So tell the audience, what is that?
Well, first of all, the peak oil story isn't quite as cut and dry as that. You know, for the moment, it's really more a matter of running out of cheap oil, oil that we can afford, oil that's consistent at price with the kind of economy we've set up. Although, eventually, you know, it will be translated into basically running out of oil. the way that this problem is played out is very interesting, and probably the main feature of what's going on right now is that the financial system has suffered more than any of the other major systems that we depend on because of the resource and energy situation. There's a direct relationship between energy and available energy, the master resource for our economy,
right,
and finance. And when the energy supply becomes kind of sketchy in one way or another, either in supply or price, it starts to be reflected in the behavior of money and currencies and markets.
Basically everything.
And so we're seeing them destabilize right now. And so what's probably going to get us into trouble before the resource question even really kicks in hard is that our money system is and our banking system is kind of in a, entering a state of deep instability.
Okay, so your theory then is that you see that as your prediction coming to fruition. You think that your prediction about the problems with peak oil, you're seeing that today in the money markets and the problems that we're having with the money markets.
Yeah, and overall, you know, the main mission for politics and for people who are concerned about what to do about this situation is to understand that we need to manage the contraction of our industrial economy. You know, the industrial adventure has been really exciting and interesting and fun for the human race, but it's a story with a beginning and a middle and an end, and we're moving into the next phase of human history, and it's going to involve a contraction of a lot of these activities. We're going to have to get smaller. We're going to have to get more local. We're going to have to downscale all of the important activities that we do, whether it's farming or the way we do trade or the way we do transportation, the way we inhabit the landscape, all of these major things that we do are going to have to change. And we don't want to. You know, what we're engaged in right now, both, you know, in the sense of our collective mentality and our political choices, is a campaign to sustain the unsustainable. And, you know, that unfortunately, that will have a less than ideal outcome.
All right. Well, you keep saying things are unsustainable. I guess my basic question is that because of the oil? Is it because we're running out of oil? Is that the basic premise here?
Well, it's because we're running out of our master fossil fuel resources, and we're not going to offset them with things that we call renewable. The key to understanding this is I don't want to be misunderstood. We're going to try everything we possibly can. We're going to use everything we possibly can. But we are not going to run Walmart, the interstate highway system, Walt Disney World, suburbia, and the U.S. Army on any combination of solar, wind, shale oil, shale gas, dark matter, algae secretions, or all the other things that we're wishing for. We really have to make new arrangements for everyday life in America, or we're going to be in a very disorderly economy and culture.
Yeah, you mentioned shale oil, and you know, we'll come back to that probably later in the show. I did mention to a lawyer buddy of mine, you know, who's real into environmental litigation, environmental issues, that, you know, I'd be interviewing you today, and he said, well, you know, I think maybe James Consul is wrong, because what about shale oil? I mean, we've discovered other ways of getting to oil. What's your answer to that?
Well, this is the major kind of wishful delusion that is now thundering across the collective mind space of America. And it's kind of the result of a massive propaganda campaign by the oil industry. But it's based on the very real and broad wish that we can keep on running the stuff that we've got the way we're used to running it. But the truth is, I think, that we're going to be very disappointed by the shale oil and shale gas situation, that it's not going to produce nearly what we're hoping, that the way it's ramped up, it was ramped up really as a demonstration project to show investors that it would be a good thing to put their money in. But, you know, because of the disorders in banking, what we're seeing now is a very significant contraction in available capital. And that means the capital that will be available to conduct further shale gas operations and shale oil operations. So it's very, you know, it costs a lot to get this stuff out of the ground. It takes four times as much steel to run fracking operations as it does to run a conventional oil well. And I think what we're going to discover, that, you know, one of the consequences of the banking fiasco is that the money to do this kind of work is not going to be there.
Well, stuff like
so, a lot of the shale oil and shale gas will be left in the ground.
Well, let me ask you, shale oil. I know there's offshore drilling. There's a lot of other, you know, kind of. I won't say offshore drilling is a newer method, but you know, older methods are putting more interest and more capital into. Are we basically scraping the bottom of the barrel here? Or is that the way you see it?
Yeah, so to speak. You know, we have used all the so-called low-hanging fruit of the oil and fossil fuel industry, and the stuff that's left is harder to get. It's found in places that are extremely unfavorable to work in, and it's very expensive. And so, you know, we're coming into kind of a crunch between the amount of money that it costs to get the stuff out of the ground and the amount that people can even afford to spend on it. And right now, we're really in the marginal space, you know, as far as Americans are concerned, with the price that they pay just for gasoline. It can't really go a whole lot higher without absolutely crushing what remains of the middle class and the way that they live their lives.
All right, we got to take a break here in a little bit, but I'm talking to James Howard Kunstler, author of the national bestseller, The Long Emergency, and recently Too Much Magic, subtitled Wishful Thinking, Technology, and the Fate of the Nation. Again, you know, I think the basic premise to The Long Emergency was that it was all about peak oil. You know, at some point we're going to run dry of fossil fuels. And as I understand it, your point today is that, you know, we're getting there. We're scraping the bottom of the barrel. You're telling me that you don't see alternative energy as being the answer. So when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about why you don't see alternative energy as the answer, why you don't think that solar power, wind power, all that kind of thing, what will get us out of this bind. This is Jack Wilinchek on Legalese Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. Wilinchek & Partners, recently named Arizona's top real estate law firm, provides the quality business litigation and mediation services that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Dennis Wilinchek was voted Best Trial Attorney by Arizona Foothills Magazine 2013 and named one of Arizona's top-rated lawyers for professional yet very personal legal representation. Call Wilinchek & Partners today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
Your business can make more and spend less when you use By the Numbers sales and marketing software. And to prove it, you can try By the Numbers free for 30 days. Call right now to get started with this simple, user-friendly business boosting program. And when you fall in love with By the Numbers, don't worry, it doesn't cost thousands of dollars. Try this business building software free right now. Call 480-652-9212. That's 480-652-9212.
She's back for 2013. Laura Ingraham in the Morning. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. Right here on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX.
Hi, this is Connie Salica. Tune into my show, Intelligence for Your Health, right here on Independent Talk. 1100 KFNX, Sundays at 10 p.m.
Talk to your customers when they're on the go and get them to go to your business by using the instant push communication of a mobile business app designed just for you. Your mobile business app can offer coupons or specials and schedule reservations or appointments. Faxing is so last century and email is headed for the dustbin of history. Texting is the new talking. Talk to your customers with your own customized mobile business app. Call 602-721-2020. That's 602-721-2020.
Stay up late. Alex Jones, After Dark. Nights, 1 to 3 a.m. On Independent Time, 1100 KFNX. The home of the Alex Jones Show. Catch the Dennis Miller Show. Weekdays 10 till noon. On Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
The Renaissance Festival is back!
Huzzah!
Weekends now through March 31st.
You love the Renaissance Festival!
Great shopping! A giant crafts market!
25 years of fun in the sun!
Welcome to the Renaissance Festival!
New shows! Non-stop feasting! The Renaissance Festival is back! Huzzah! Weekends now through March 31st. Huzzah! Special savings from discount coupons from Hall of Frames, Ariba's Mexican Grill, and Phoenix Flower Shops. While supplies last.
I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha!
Welcome back to Legalese. Your host, Jack Willinchek. And today we're talking to James Howard Kunstler, who is the author of the book The Long Emergency. And recently, Too Much Magic, subtitled Wishful Thinking, Technology, and the Fate of the Nation. Welcome back to the show, James.
Nice to be here.
All right. As I said before we went to the break there, the way I understand it, your basic premise, again, that we're running out of peak oil, but you don't see things like wind power, solar power, alternative energy as the answer. Why is that? How is that not the answer?
I think we're going to try everything we possibly can. But, we have to understand that we can make these things and we can fabricate these alternative energy things because we have an underlying platform of a petroleum and fossil fuel economy. And when that becomes problematical, it's going to become problematical to produce the solar panels and the wind turbines and all those things. We're moving into a point where we're not going to have the kind of economy that can even afford to produce these kinds of things that we wish that we could. And I'm sure we're going to go through an interval where we will try desperately to do it, but most people are probably not going to have access to these things. And at the same time, other things are in, other events are in motion that are going to tend to thrust us into probably a politically unstable situation, and a lot of envy and resentment on the parts of some groups of people for other groups of people, and that will only make it harder for us to have an orderly transition to whatever the next energy regime and economic regime is going to be.
All right, well, why don't we go there? I take it that's the point of your new book. And why don't we go there? What is the next step? What are we looking at? Is it Mad Max? What's the world going to look like after we run out of oil?
No, and it's funny because a lot of people forget that Mad Max, the first original Mad Max, was actually a car chase movie.
Right, yeah, I know that.
It was mostly about guys driving around in cars, and that's exactly what we're not going to be in. We're going to be leaving the post-happy motoring automobile phase of history behind, and of course that's going to be very problematical for places like Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely.
And after I wrote The Long Emergency in 2005, I wrote a couple of novels that were set in the post-economic collapse American future. And the first one was titled World Made by Hand. And it kind of summarizes in the title where I think we're headed, to a world that is going to be economically much less complex than the one we're in today, much more local, probably shockingly to many people, the economy will be centered much more around agriculture than anything else. Certainly more than high tech or entertainment or many of the things that seem to be at the center of the American economy today.
Yeah, I saw that you're a fiction writer, and I said to my producer, it kind of reminds me of one of my favorite authors. It was Frank Herbert, the guy who wrote the book Dune.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of the premise of the book Dune, was that You know, in the far future, there's a dark ages where everything's gone backwards. You know, people are fighting with swords. You know, they've got dukes and you know, kings, and it's like an agrarian dark ages kind of society. Is that the kind of thing that you're thinking of?
I do think that we're heading into what I would call a reset of economic and cultural events. And part of it will be a time out from our current idea of what technological progress has been. And remember, you know, we've been through this incredible cavalcade for the last 150 years of just incredible technological marvels from, you know, railroads, telephones, skyscrapers, elevators.
Aerospace, yeah, all the big booms.
Yeah, right. Airplanes, motion pictures, radio, atomic energy, computers. And we've been programmed to expect that this is going to go on endlessly, that the cavalcade, you know, the parade never ends. I think we're going to discover that the parade does end, or at least come to a pause, and we're entering what I would call a timeout. It's, you know, hard to say how long that timeout may go on. It may go on for 50 years or 500 years. We really don't know.
When you say timeout, yeah, you don't want to use the words dark ages, I take it.
Well, I don't see any need to unnecessarily frighten people. Personally, I think that we have a lot to gain from taking a time out from industrial technology. We've just about succeeded in committing global suicide, and in the human race committing global suicide in more than one way, you know, between nuclear weapons and climate change. We've done an incredible amount of damage, and it probably the planet needs us to take a time out. So, but I do think that there's going to be plenty of opportunity for human joy and accomplishment and art and love and, you know.
All those good things.
All those good things that make life great. But it's not going to be about driving to Walmart. That's the part. You know, those are some of the features of life that are not going to continue. And it's very hard for Americans to imagine that, you know, those things wouldn't be present anymore.
Well, you know, historically, let me ask you, historically, there was a certain timeout. There was a dark ages in Europe. Have you studied those kind of things? Can you speak to why?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, history doesn't repeat itself necessarily. Although Mark Twain remarked that it rhymes, even if it doesn't repeat itself. But there are cycles of things, and most human episodes have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, they're kind of stories with an arc. And we assume that the industrial technological age will continue forever, but it really is a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And now we have to imagine what the next phase of life is going to be, and I think it is frightening for people, and you know, they have enough terror and anxiety in their lives, even within the bubble of our present way of life. People are struggling to, you know, pay their bills and raise their children and avoid getting shot by a maniac, and you know, find a way to get from one place to another without crashing their car. You know, all these anxieties of daily life are enormous in America, keeping their families together, keeping their marriages together. And it's very hard for, I think, ordinary people to imagine the kind of changes that I'm suggesting. But human beings are very resilient and adaptable. And, you know, most of human history in one way or another is improvisational. We make it up as we go along, and we respond to the conditions that reality presents to us. And sometimes we do a better job than other times, but we are facing those kinds of challenges.
You know, as you talk, what I'm thinking of, I mean, I studied a lot of math in college. I like to think, you know, in terms of math a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the economy goes up and down. It's like a perfect sine, well, not a perfect sine wave, but it is a sine wave. It goes up and down. And, you know, I suppose there might be a longer-term sine wave, and there probably is.
Well, as you know, there are many cycles and super cycles within,
right,
you know, economic history. And
right,
some of them are very long cycles.
Right, and that's,
you know,
what
some of them
you're
are
talking
hundreds
about
of years. Pardon?
And that's basically what you're talking about here, is a very long-range cycle that, as you see it, is coming to its end.
Yeah, this has been about a 400-year cycle of we discovered how to use fossil fuels in a way to make a huge, tremendous amount of work happen. Tremendous amount of energy to produce a tremendous amount of work to accomplish tremendous things. In the process, there were some unintended consequences. I don't think anybody really wanted to ramp up the human population to 7.5 billion people so that we were, going to run into terrible problems of competition over scarcity. Nobody, I think, planned on that. But, that's what happened when you apply fossil fuels to agriculture. And you basically get to turn oil into food. And, it happened, and now we have to deal with it. It's not going to be very easy to deal with. And, in fact, I do college lectures, and there's always some crank in the back of the room who gets up and says, "Oh, you didn't say anything about population control." And the reason I don't say anything is because we're not going to do anything about it. There isn't going to be any policy or protocol about population. And the usual suspects, so-called, are going to come into the picture and do their thing, and that will be, scarcity and starvation and disease and probably to some degree conflict and violence. And the population will go down. And human beings do have a limited shelf life of about 80 to 100 years at best. So even under the best circumstances, we're going to be, the population will go down.
All right. I'm talking to James Howard Kunstler, who is the author of Too Much Magic, Wishful Thinking, Technology, and the Fate of the Nation. You may also know him as the author of The Long Emergency about peak oil. This is Jack Willinchek in Legalese, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
You're listening to The Alex Jones Show on KFNX, 1100 AM. Because there's a war on for your mind.
NBC News Radio, I'm Melissa Rayberger. The cash-strapped U.S. Postal Service announced that as of August, it will stop delivering letters on Saturday but continue to handle packages. The reviews are mixed.
I think it's great that they're stopping Saturday delivery. They should have done it a long time ago.
It's convenient for a lot of people to deal with things on a Saturday.
The move is designed to save $2 billion. The Boy Scouts of America is postponing a decision on lifting its longtime ban on gay scouts or leaders. A statement released today said the board will make a ruling in May. Secretary of State John Kerry was officially sworn in at a private ceremony on Friday. Today, the former Massachusetts senator took the ceremonial oath at the State Department.
I want to share with all of you that as a recovering politician, I've grown used to being sworn at. It's really nice to be sworn in.
On Wall Street, stocks were mixed. The Dow was up 7, the Nasdaq down 3, and the S&P was up a fraction of a point. This is NBC News Radio.
Arizona News Radio, a small plane crash is doing touch-and-go landings at the Casa Grande Airport today.
The plane's pretty much beyond recognition. There's no identifiable tail markings.
A violent Arizona street gang's been busted.
Glendale police serve 7 search warrants, arresting 8 members of the Grandel criminal street gang. Another 2 dozen are still being sought in connection with Operation Neighborhood Guardian, a 12-month-long investigation into this gang with prison ties.
The Salt River Project is sending some work crews to the Navajo Nation to help restore water that was impacted by that frigid weather last month.
We're going to send up 2 4-man crews, and those crews will be bringing, I think, 6 trucks and a couple of trailers that are going to be carrying large excavation and trenching equipment.
Jody Arias testified about the failing relationship with Travis Alexander.
The emotion and, like I said, just the mental connection.
George Catter, Arizona.
This KFNX check of your traffic is brought to you by Firestone Complete Auto Care. We got some accidents out there to report, folks. One in the HOV lane. This is in Phoenix, I-17 northbound at Indian School Road, exit 202. Another off to the side loop, 202 westbound near the I-10 Highway 51, exit 1A. Also, if you're driving through Chandler, we have a crash that's blocking the right-hand lane. That's I-10 eastbound, east of Highway 347, Wild Horse Pass Boulevard. This month, buy 3 and get the 4th free on Firestone Champion HR high-performance tires for your passenger vehicle. Call 1-800-LOCATE-US to find the Firestone Complete Auto Care nearest you. Now here's your forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, tomorrow, low 70s, a gorgeous Thursday, and then we start the change with this storm on Friday, partly cloudy, mid-60s. back into the cold 50s over the weekend. Some scattered desert showers. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Thanks, Jim. Currently in Midtown, we're at 72 degrees. Your next news is in 30 minutes or when it breaks. You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. I'm James Sinnott, and you're up to date.
Willinchek & Bartness, recently named Arizona's top real estate law firm, provides the quality business litigation and mediation services that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Dennis Willinchek was voted Best Trial Attorney by Arizona Foothills Magazine 2013 and named one of Arizona's top-rated lawyers for professional yet very personal legal representation. Call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
Hi friends, Scott Luther, the King of Gold and Silver. Join my protest against Wall Street and these big bankers who want to steal your hard-earned money.
Listen, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, 12 to 1 p.m., Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m., and Sunday, 6 to 7 a.m. Ride the Scott Luther Gold and Silver Express to financial freedom by buying silver.
Just buy silver. Turn $5,000 into $25,000, $50,000 into $250,000.
Call 888-551-2646, 888-551-2646, or go to lrccoins.com.
I'm Carol Blonder, the host of Networking Arizona, and I've got a way for you to get the word out about what you do. Do an airtime 15-minute segment on my primetime radio show. Call me at area code 602-228-4629, networkingarizona.net.
Coming up this week on the John Tesh Radio Show, we'll talk about background checks and why it's important to give yourself one. I'll explain why that could be the key to getting your next job. And I have the facts about caffeine, because there is a difference between the caffeine in soda and the stuff we drink in coffee or tea. I'll tell you why one is bad for our health, the other is not. Intelligence for your life on the John Tesh Radio Show. Tune into my show right here on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX, Saturdays at 10 p.m.
Tune in to the Edward Woodson Show with me, your host, Edward Woodson. We'll talk business, politics, and the things that really make you mad.
Catch the Edward Woodson Show weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. only on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
You have the right to remain silent.
That's what I'm...
If you give up the right to remain silent,
freedom.
Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law.
Freedom.
You have the right to speak with an attorney.
Get me my lawyer!
And to have the attorney present during questioning. If you so desire and cannot afford one, an attorney will be appointed for you without charge before questioning. Now, do you understand each of these rights I've explained to you?
Get me my lawyer! I've been humiliated!
All right, now that the Miranda rights have been read, I can resume my interrogation here. We're talking to James Howard Kunstler, who is the author of The Long Emergency about peak oil, and he has a new book out called Too Much Magic, Wishful Thinking, Technology, and the Fate of the Nation. And by the way, if you want to call in and ask, hey, when are we going to hit peak oil? What can I do about it? Go ahead and give us a call here, 602-277-KFNX. That's 602-277-5369. James, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be here.
All right, you know, I did have a question actually over the break. Somebody wants to know, if you had to compare, well, the question is, what year in U.S. history will our future look like? So I think, I mean, you know, if you had to compare what our future is going to look like, what are we going to be riding on in horses and buggies, or is it going to be, you know, like 50 years ago, 100 years ago? How far back are we going to fall?
Well, history is not exactly symmetrical. That's one problem. You know, you don't go down the slope exactly the way you came up. When I wrote my futuristic novel set, you know, a couple of decades forward, there were some things that seemed obvious to me. One was that we weren't going to be driving around in automobiles. You know, a lot of people complained when that book came out that everybody wasn't riding a bicycle. But what I realized just in, you know, in the first few pages of writing the book was that we wouldn't have the advanced metallurgy that we have now to produce the kind of parts that you need to make the kind of bicycles that people were thinking of. But probably more important, the pavements of the roads would be pretty badly broken up, you know, by the time that this happened, and
right.
Pretty hard to ride bicycles on. You know, I think that the texture and flavor of it is, there will be some elements of it that will be kind of like the 19th century, and there will be some elements of it that will be a good deal more desperate, because even in the 19th century, we had tremendous wealth of material natural resources, and that's going to be much more difficult. You know, the quality of the ores that are available now are much lower than they used to be. You know, there are far fewer, usable parts of metal in the tonnage of ore that you have to dig to get the stuff. And, you have to go much farther afield to get it. You can't just, take a train, 200 miles west of Pittsburgh and stick a pipe in the ground and get oil out anymore. So it's going to be kind of problematical. And, I think we are going to be in basically an agricultural economy.
Yeah, well.
And activities that support that.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to gauge where I come out on this. And, obviously fossil fuels are non-renewable. You know, we get to the end of the fossils and we're done. You know, we're not creating more fossils. But, it seems to me the next step, logically, if it's not going to be non-renewables, and you may be right about that, solar power is pretty tough to produce. I think probably the next step to me seems to be atomic energy. That's something that, we've backed off of, I think, mostly because of the danger in it. But there's certainly more uranium to be mined. That's a non-renewable resource that we have not exhausted yet. And potentially, even if we do run out of Earth's uranium or, whatever used to sustain nuclear power, there's other plants that might have uranium. So I'd be curious to know your thoughts on that.
Well, I wrote about this in The Long Emergency, and my opinion has only changed a little bit. One thing that I thought was that if we do want to keep the lights on, for another 50 years, that probably atomic energy may be the only feasible way of doing it, but it is fraught with enormous hazards. There's a lot of wishful thinking right now that we can take an element with a slightly lower radioactivity level like thorium and run reactors off of that. The problem for the moment is that there are no active demonstration projects up and running in the world. And if it takes another 10, 20, 30 years to even produce a prototype of that, it may be too late. We may not be able to afford it. We're going to run into that. That will be one place where we will run into the capital shortage problem. Nuclear power plants are incredibly expensive to build, and we're running out of money. And there's just not going to be any substitute for not having enough wealth to do that. The Fukushima disaster in Japan, I think, also put another twist on the whole issue. And it's made people aware that you have one particular problem of many with nuclear plants, which is that if, for one reason or another, they lose access to fossil fuels to run some of the operations in the plants, and the grid, or we have problems with the electric grid generally, and nuclear plants sit idle for a period of weeks, they're liable to see their fuel stocks melt down. And we really have no workable scenario for what happens in the event of that kind of a problem. And we're not really planning for it. And so there are hazards beyond the obvious ones that are not being very well thought out and debated publicly.
So you don't think that basically fossil fuels can get us from here to there? You don't think they can bridge the gap, into the next stage, which again seems to me to be atomic energy? You don't think you think we're gonna fall short there? I think you're referring to it as a capital shortage before we can get there.
There's certainly a wish that we could do it, but it begs the question: what is the destination of that transition? What is the rescue remedy or, Santa Claus gift of a new and unknown and different kind of energy source that we just don't know about now? And it's getting a little bit late in the game for that to happen. In the meanwhile, we're making absolutely no plans to live differently, and unfortunately we need to. I don't know what you think about this. I'd be kind of curious, but how does a place like Phoenix transition into, for example, a non-car-dependent economy and society? I don't really see that happening very successfully.
I'll tell you, I'm on the front lines of that. I bought a Chevy Volt a few months ago, and, it's a little tough. The Chevy Volt only goes about 30, 40 miles on the battery. So, you know, I take
more than
that.
And that's a one-way trip in Phoenix.
That's exactly right. It's a one-way trip. That's from Phoenix to Scottsdale. So, you know, a little bit more. But, yeah, it is tough. Even charging that thing up every day at home like I do, there are very few charging stations. Yeah, at this point, I mean, I think we're starting to build that bridge, and it's going to be a long ways, especially with cars like that. They can only go, you know, 40-something miles. They're going to have to do better than that. But I do think we're on a start there. You know, again, as I said, I do buy your point that solar power is just it's weak. And I'll tell you, you know, real quick, one of the reasons I think that is when you think real hard about it, you know, you think about the way nature works, you think about the way fossil fuels are produced. You know, as I said, they're basically fossils and, you know, dead dinosaurs. The dead dinosaurs were eating plants, you know. What are plants?
They're probably not dead dinosaurs. It's probably from plant matter.
Matter, right. Yeah, old organic matter. That's a good point. Old organic matter, which, you know, okay, say it was plants. Plants are essentially solar powered. They're powered by the sun.
But these are, you know, millions and millions and millions of years of compressed, you know, solar power from plants. And that's why
exactly.
It's so valuable. You know, the time element is almost inconceivable to, you know, to most people.
So my point is if solar power, you know, essentially, you know, photosynthesis took that long to produce that kind of fuel, then it just goes to show that solar power is probably effectively a weak power source. If, you know,
well,
go ahead.
Yeah. And also it shows that fossil fuels were unbelievably exceptional and really a great gift for the couple of hundred years that we had them.
Right. Right. All right, we got to take a break here in a little bit, but I'm talking to James Howard Kunstler, author of The Long Emergency about peak oil, and author of a new book called Too Much Magic, Wishful Thinking, Technology, and the Fate of the Nation. We come back from a break. We're going to wrap up here with James, talk some more about maybe what you can actually do to prepare for this long emergency when it comes. It's Jack Wilenchek, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Wilenchek & Bartness, recently named Arizona's top real estate law firm, provides the quality business litigation and mediation services that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Dennis Wilenchek was voted best trial attorney by Arizona Foothills Magazine 2013 and named one of Arizona's top-rated lawyers. For professional, yet very personal legal representation, call Wilenchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
Listen live all season long and pull for your U of A Wildcats men's basketball team. You can catch all of the action right here, only on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX, your home for Arizona Wildcat sports.
The sources I have for information are unique and better because they're based upon real life experiences.
Herman Cain, afternoons 5 to 7, right here on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX.
If you simply start taking Social Security benefits, taking them for face value, you could be leaving tens of thousands of dollars on the table. But if you knew a few little-known strategies, you may have the potential to earn tens of thousands of dollars more, even as much as $100,000 more in Social Security income. So take the first step and get a copy of our complimentary report, The Social Security Decisions Guide. 877-500-0350. That's 877-500-0350.
Rex Perry here. If you would like to be a guest on our radio show for free, you can go to our website, 123bz.com. That's 123, B as in boy, Z as in zebra.com. Send us an email. My email address is right there on the very first page. Just send me a synopsis of your business, give me a little bit of background, contact information, and we'll get back with you and see if you could do a radio interview on the air on B2B Radio. That's the name of our show, and we'd love to have you as a guest. 123bz.com.
I try to sleep, they're wide awake, they won't let me alone. They don't get paid to take vacations, they'll let me alone. They spy on me, I try to hide, they won't let me alone. They persecute me, they're the judges, jury, all in one.
Welcome back to Legalese. This is Jack Wilenchek. And let's get back to the persecution here, the interrogation of James Howard Kunstler. I'm really putting you through the ropes here. I enjoy that. He's got a new book out called Too Much Magic, Wishful Thinking, Technology, and the Fate of the Nation. And you may remember his other book, The Long Emergency, which is about peak oil. And, you know, I think people out there might be wondering, all right, so we say we are coming up to this point here where we're running out of oil and there's not an immediate, you know, option on the horizon to replace it. What should people be doing out there? Should they be prepping for this? Should they be, I don't know, I guess I would say buying bikes, but you said that bikes are going to be problems. So what should people out there be doing?
Well, I don't think it's a terrible thing to buy a bike at this point, but there are a lot of things.
They can't buy a Chevy
need.
Volt. That's not going to help.
Well, that whole, the whole car thing is interesting because most people assume that the whole equation of happy motoring will rise or fall on the whole fuel issue. But I maintain that it's actually more likely to hinge on the money and capital issue, because what's happening is, you know, because we're entering this period of capital scarcity, there's going to be a lot less money for car loans for people and fewer people who qualify for them. And that's the way Americans are used to buying cars, you know, on installment loans. So far fewer Americans are going to be able to even participate in the car buying thing. At the same time, municipalities are going broke, and so are states and counties. And they're going to have trouble maintaining the tremendously elaborate roadway system that we've acquired over the last 90 years.
And as you mentioned, Phoenix is one of the biggest, you know, offenders there. We have a lot of sprawl, just like Los Angeles has.
Listen, man, last time I was in Phoenix, I stayed at a conference center in the city, and you had to drive from the place where you slept to the place where they gave you coffee in the morning.
Yep.
Within the same pod.
Yep, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
But you asked, you know, what can people do? And I think there are some important things to consider. One is, you know, if you're a young person, you have to really seriously consider what your vocation is going to be, what kind of occupation that you're going to pursue. And it better be a pretty hands-on, practical thing. There are going to be far fewer marketing jobs for, you know, people working for the Target store and things like that, and far fewer jobs for cubicle serfs. But there will be many, many opportunities in farming and agriculture at all levels. One of my political pet peeves is we desperately need to rebuild the conventional railroad system in America.
Mm.
We can't afford to build high-speed rail at this point. We may build one or two lines or get a few lines started, but we're not going to build a comprehensive system. But we have a perfectly good railroad system lying out there rusting in the rain.
That's right.
People would be delighted to be able to go from Phoenix to Salt Lake City at 90 miles an hour.
Right. They shut down a lot of the passenger rails out here. That's a good point.
Yeah, so we got to do that. That's terribly, imperatively important. Individuals need to consider what region of the country might be, you know, a more favorable place to go settle in. Personally, I think the Sun Belt's going to be in trouble, both the wet Sun Belt and the dry Sun Belt where you guys are. And I think what you're going to see is that economic trouble that you have will be exactly proportionate to the economic success of the last 40 years. You know, as you discover that, you know, unless everybody has air conditioning in a place like Phoenix or a place like Orlando, unless everybody has cheap air conditioning, including all the gardeners and all the service people, you know, you're not really going to be able to run that kind of city anymore. You know, and that's outside of the whole issue of, you know, how people are going to get around these places that were designed strictly for motoring. And so I think choosing the part of the country that would be a favorable place is a very important consideration. I happen to think that the Great Lakes region is one very undervalued place, because the Great Lakes is sort of the freshwater Mediterranean Sea of North America. It's surrounded by really good agriculture land, and it probably has a brighter future than the Southwest.
Let me ask you this. I asked you earlier on the show, and I think I'll follow up on it. Are there some examples, I guess not just in history, but today, where, you know, things have fallen backwards? And I'll tell you, the example I'm thinking of in my head, and I'd like to see if you agree, is Detroit is one of those cities where there's, a lot of industry, and now it's fallen behind. It's fallen back.
Well, it's the poster child for urban collapse of the kind of city and the kind of economy that we've had, and it's kind of the canary in the coal mine. It's the, you know, you point to it when you're discussing really bad outcomes for places. And I do think that our big cities, all of our big giant metroplex cities, are going to have trouble. But the suburbs are probably even more problematical, and they are going to fail. And the cities that are composed mostly of suburbs are going to find themselves in great difficulty.
So are you going to start seeing kind of the same thing that happened to Detroit, or how does that play out?
Well, I think it'll be a little bit different for every, you know, I think the story in Phoenix will be different. It'll partly be a question of, you know, how hot it gets there and how dry it gets and whether you can get enough water. It'll partly be a question of when our agricultural farming system stops working well. You know, how are you guys going to get food? How are people going to get around your city? These are slightly different questions than you'll get in Grand Rapids or Montpelier, Vermont, or, you know, other cities. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, a place like New York will discover that it's overburdened with skyscrapers, with megastructures that cannot be renovated or maintained. And they're going to discover that the skyscraper building spree of the last 50 years is a terrible blunder, because these things are going to turn out to be liabilities, not assets. So, you know, our cities face different problems. I do think what we'll see ultimately is a return of energy, of human energy and enterprise to the smaller towns and the smaller cities and the places that have a meaningful relationship with farming. And those will be the places to go in the future. They will be scaled to the energy realities of the future.
Let me ask you probably what's one of the most common and toughest questions that you get. What is the timeline for this? I mean, are we talking the next 10 years, next 20 years, next 50 years?
Yeah, I happen to think in the next, you know, within the next 5, 10 years, we're going to see major changes and major challenges to the way we live. We're going to see things like, you know, the collapse of the airline industry, which has been flirting with bankruptcy for the last 10 years, but, you know, they're really going to start going down. We're going to see a situation where in motoring and driving cars, where it's going to become just increasingly impossible for many, many classes of people in America to participate in the driving system. And they're going to be left high and dry. You know, we have, you know, personally, I think we're going to see an awful lot of political instability, much more than we have now, as this growing former middle class and sort of disenfranchised middle class, economically disenfranchised, start to get really ticked off about their situation. They've been very apathetic up to this point. But, you know, sooner or later, people are going to get ticked off. And, you know, I think it's going to make our politics very difficult. You asked me about history, and I think this period is, in some ways, a little bit like the 1850s in the USA, which was a period of, you know, political fumbling and bad leadership. You know, the time of Millard Fillmore and Franklin Pierce and presidents who are totally forgotten now.
And
it preceded, that period preceded the last really great convulsion that the American, that the USA went through, which was the Civil War. And, you know, many of the tensions of the 1850s were resolved in that convulsion. And, you know, I think that we're facing a kind of a convulsion that's going to be more of an economic and political convulsion, rather than, you know, a civil war. But it may be just as difficult and fierce and, you know, produce a lot of hardship for people.
All right, I understand that you do yearly predictions. So let me ask, what are your predictions for 2013?
My main prediction for this year is that I think a lot of the chickens are going to come back to roost as far as the banking situation goes. You know, we've been basically running the banking system on accounting fraud for about the last 6 or 7 years. And we're running out of our ability to do that. And we've been very comprehensively lying to ourselves about, you know, what's in the bank's vaults and what's on their books and whether they're solvent or not. And a lot of this will have a tremendous bearing on our ability to keep on, you know, conducting normal business in America. And so I think the main feature is going to be kind of an inflection point in the banking fiasco.
What do you think about the stock market's recent rise? Do you have any explanation for that? Any prediction for that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, institutions like the Federal Reserve have been doing everything possible to drive people into the equity markets, because there's absolutely no way that you can put capital to work in any other way right now. You know, bonds don't pay anything, and I think people are desperate, especially retired people, desperate for some kind of yield, and they've been persuaded that the stock market is the place to go. I personally don't think it's going to be a very much of a rally. You know, I think that it's going to run out of steam any moment. Probably it may have just in the last couple of days.
And, well, I think those are some good words to finish up on here. Running out of steam. I think that's that's your big point. All right, with the last few seconds here, go ahead and tell the audience how they can get a hold of your book or where they can find you online.
Well, my book, Too Much Magic, published by the Atlantic Monthly Press, is available at all the usual suspects who sell books. My blog appears at my website, Kunstler.com, KUNSTLER.com, every Monday morning by 9 o'clock Eastern Time.
All right, good deal.
And there's a podcast also on my website.
All right. Thank you so much, James. That was James Kunstler, author of Too Much Magic. Thanks for coming on the show.
Quite welcome, Jack. Nice to be with you. Bye-bye.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon with an invitation to come and tour Dreamcatcher Assisted Living Homes. Even if you're not ready to make the decision, come anyway, see what we do. Smell the home-cooked meals, meet our caregivers, ask questions, pet the dog, and stay for lunch. At Dreamcatcher, we're about assisting our family of residents to live life to the fullest. We celebrate life. On the serious side, both Dreamcatcher homes are licensed and our professional caregivers are certified at the highest level of care. That means we're able to care for residents with multiple serious health issues. We work closely with the best hospices, and we've earned a solid reputation with state and local agencies, doctors, nurses, hospice, but most important, with the residents we serve and their families. And right now, we have openings. If you're paying over $4,000 a month and are charged extra for every little thing, call and talk to Gail, 602-410-6671. That's 602-410-6671 or online at dreamcatcheraz.com. Dreamcatcheraz.com.
You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX, Cave Creek, Phoenix, a division of Premier Radio Stations.